All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, at least that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each episode, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I welcome wrestling star Logan Easton LaRue to the program. He is one of the finest pro wrestlers on the East Coast, and I look forward to chatting about his career to date and where he still intends to go in the future. But first, the promoter of Primal Conflict Wrestling, Tyler Steele, will be here to talk about PCW's big upcoming event, Revolution Rumble, on September 17th in Ranson, West Virginia. Hi, Tyler. This is David Buckler with OWW Radio. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good, sir.
Tyler, I did the opening to the show, and I mentioned that you are the driving force, the promoter of Primal Conflict Wrestling. You have a big show on September 17th in Ranson, West Virginia. Tell us how you got involved with PCW.
Well, I got involved by PCW, a need or a void of quality professional wrestling in the area. So saw a need, decided to fill it. So started PCW kind of modestly, and it's grown over the last 9.5 years into what I feel is a very respectable product, and we're growing every day, every year, every event, in new states, new markets, bringing in new talent, getting a little more attention. So, I mean, it's been a gradual rise, but, you know, we're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm. 9.5 years is pretty impressive for an independent promotion. What makes Primal Conflict Wrestling one of the best promotions in the area?
The locker room, the roster. I'd put them against any group of professional wrestlers anywhere. That includes Monday night, Tuesday night, you know, what have you. Just great talent. We give them a platform to excel on, and they take advantage of the opportunity. And that's the biggest advantage that we have, is that, you know, there's always going to be a miss on somebody that we, you know, might bring in, but for the most part, we've got a very good track record as far as the talent that is presented in PCW, and that's the major advantage and a major factor that drives PCW to be successful.
Tell us who your champions are right now.
Champions right now, the PCW Heavyweight Champion is Drolix, the mm-hmm. CEO of Black Wall Street. He has been champion for about 287 days, if memory serves correct. He defeated Dirty Money by cashing in his DOA Memorial Cup opportunity at last year's A Night to Remember. He's been phenomenal as a champion, in my opinion. You know, successful defenses over former champs Dirty Money, Bobby Shields, Al Snow, Nui Tafiga. He's got Rhino coming up on the 17th. I don't see any signs of him slowing down. Our tag team champions are the Forgiven, which is my tag team, the Reaper, Matt mm-hmm. Connard, and Jason the Gift Kincaid, who some folks might have seen on Ring of Honor television. But he's in demand internationally, does regular tours of Canada, just was in Mexico City this past week. They're a viable, I guess, in-demand hot commodity, the two of them. And I believe that they have been tag team champions for 580 days. Defended against the Bullet Club, Sanjay Dutt and Dirty Money, Country Strong, Bobby Shields and Dirty Money. I mean, everybody that they faced has come up short. And then we have Scarlett and Graves, who I'm not terribly familiar with other than some YouTube videos, but I know that Desmond Xavier and Zachary Wentz are very popular with the internet crowd and doing a lot of things, CZW and Rockstar Pro out in Dayton, Ohio. So I'm looking forward to see what they bring to the table as well.
Well, you are talking here about your champions, and they are in action September 17th, PCW's Revolution Rumble. Right at the top, Tyler, your heavyweight title defended. Drolix meets the man-beast Rhino. What a main event, huh?
Absolutely. We were fortunate enough that you know, we've had a past relationship with Rhino, and Luckily, him going back to SmackDown Live hasn't affected his ability to work for PCW and several other independents. Obviously, he's going to be finishing up several places, but we are fortunate enough to have him coming in on September the 17th in Ranson. I mean, that's a phenomenal main event. You know, when you talk about, I just said, you know, I said in all interviews I put up at, you know, the PCW locker room against any group from, you know, any athlete from anywhere. And this is a perfect example of that. We've got PCW champion taking on a guy that's on SmackDown Live every week, you know, and is going to be on there moving forward. So it gives us a chance to put our money where our mouth is. I mean, it could backfire, you know, Shane McMahon to have the PCW championship tied up for a year, you know. But that's kind of, you know, kind of the mantra of PCW, you know. We'll talk a loud game, but we'll back it up too. So, and that's a, you know, that's the chance we take in a matchup like that.
On the 17th, your tag team, the Forgiven, like you said, the Reaper Matt Connor and Jason the Gift Kincaid defend their PCW tag team championships. They're also one of my favorite teams, Tyler. I think they are a tremendous pair in the ring. You are their spiritual leader. Why has the Forgiven been able to hold on to those titles and become such a successful tag team?
I think it's one of those perfect storms or perfect scenarios where Jason the Gift Kincaid is phenomenal, and you know, would take the whole, you know, promoter shill out of it right now. I mean, I think that his body of work, not only in PCW but in Ring of Honor, the ECWA Super 8, MCW, Shamrock Cup, down in the NWA Smoky Mountain, everywhere he goes at, he is an MVP player. The Reaper Matt Connor, while not, doesn't have the notoriety that Jason does at the moment, I think that, you know, he's that diamond in the rough. He went toe-to-toe with Ray Rowe from Ring of Honor's War Machine, Chris Hero, Sanjay Dutt, and you're a big guy, Dave. When you stand in the ring next to Matt Connor, you realize that he sizes up well. And once his frame fills out, he's going to have that prototype WWE physique, and he's getting that experience right now. And with the two of them and the Forgiven as an entity, I think it's a win-win-win for all involved, especially the PCW fans. You know, I've had some fans say, you know, even the entrances, like, that's the coolest entrance in wrestling. I'm not sure that that's accurate, but I definitely appreciate the compliment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely enjoying seeing those guys excel not only in PCW but in other promotions as well.
Yeah, and the rest of the locker room, like you said, top to bottom, very professional. They give the fans a great, great show. In fact, coming up here later on OWW Radio, we speak with Logan Easton LaRue. Tyler, I think one of the real future stars of PCW, if not already one of your main eventers. And I also wanted to talk about the featured people you're bringing in on the 17th as well. WWE Hall of Famer Coco Beware, and also X-Pac will be there in Ranson, correct?
That is correct. X-Pac, Sean Waltman, cornerstone of both, you know, two of the wrestling's most influential factions, DX and NWO. I mean, if you watch wrestling in the last 20 years, you've probably seen X-Pac or, you know, Six or the 123 Kid, or one of his incarnations. And, you know, he was a guy, I don't know that a lot of people get it, but to the cruiserweight style that's coming back now, X-Pac was one of the early pioneers of that. You know, a lot of guys that came up, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s were inspired by the Lightning Kid, because he wasn't a bodybuilder type. And guys like Bobby Shields, he saw Lightning Kid or 123 Kid and said, well, man, if that guy could do it, then so can I. And I think that he inspired a lot of that generation of us high flyers. And definitely looking forward to seeing him. He's a huge star. I mean, they don't get much bigger than X-Pac. And then Coco Beware, WWE Hall of Famer, coming in to, you know, through some vendor channels we were fortunate enough to secure. And then it kind of matches, you know, another perfect scenario where we have Mark Bavero cut his teeth in Memphis wrestling. Where Coco Beware is a legend. You know, when you talk about Memphis wrestling, you got Jerry Lawler, Eddie Gilbert, Bill Dundee, and Coco Beware. Those are four of the most synonymous names down there. So for, you know, Coco Beware to come and face Mark Rivera and basically his home turf now, it's kind of a, you know, role reversal, and I think it's going to be an interesting match. Just one, you know, every match on this card is interesting, but I definitely will have a spot at the curtain for that one.
Memphis is one of my favorite cities in the country, too, so I appreciate the history of wrestling down there. I can't wait for that matchup you're talking about. Just so we're clear, though, Tyler, the fans coming to the show will have a chance to meet Coco, meet X-Pac, right? These guys will be out signing autographs, taking pictures, and be involved.
That is correct. That's, you know, one of the advantages of independent wrestling over, say, a WWE experience, where when you come in, you're going to have an opportunity to meet X-Pac, Rhino, Coco Beware, all the stars of PCW, get a picture taken, those sort of things. And that's, I don't think, you know, people can really appreciate that up-close intimacy and interaction with the stars until they attend an independent event.
Mm-hmm. And you said you've been doing this for a long time, almost 10 years at PCW. Take us inside the locker room. What the aspects of putting together a show like you are putting together here on September 17th, what are some of the challenges that you deal with?
Well, you know, I think every independent promoter say challenges are the financial aspects and trying to make a card and keep within budget. And that's, I think that's any promoter, but we have a kind of a double-edged sword of a challenge lately, in that a lot of the guys that we kind of had as a core part of our roster, they're getting opportunities elsewhere. Ring of Honor, namely, you know, some of our guys are getting WWE opportunities, but they're not scheduling conflicts. But that's one of the things, is that trying to balance the availability of our talent with our schedule. The other part of it is we do have such an expansive roster right now that it's hard to get, you know, I figured it up the other day. We've got 38 different wrestlers that we have, that we use, that we book, and or that we would like to, but realistically we've only got about 18 to 20 spots per event, so that leaves 18 guys that I would like to use, that we would like to have on each event without a spot. So that's a challenge as well, you know. And I'd say that, you know, we try to get the headliners and then see where they fit. You know, obviously there are guys out there that are available that you know, they might not be able to handle the PCW match. You know, we don't want to trot out a legend and put him in an unfair situation where, you know, he can't actually perform to the fans' expectations of him. So that's always a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how you market your product. How do you get the PCW name out there into the public?
Every way I can. For each event, we've taken go drives, walk, try to get up posters in storefronts. That's the old-fashioned way of doing it. A minimum of 100 posters per event, generally 300 on an event like Revolution Rumble. We have club cards that are basically mini posters, 5 to 10,000 of those per event. 10,000 went out for the Revolution Rumble event. We get banners made, various sizes, but we have a few that are 3 feet by 20 feet that we get up in high traffic locations. We got some that are 3 foot wide by 6 foot tall that are out and about. Try to get them in any places people congregate, you know, that we can get permission to have them hung. The Jefferson County Fair is going on where Ranson is located, and we've got banners out there, and the Ranson Parks and Recs, who are the sponsor of the event, they're out there, you know, passing out flyers and tickets and stuff. The New Age, we have to market through social media. We have to do Facebook ads and different contests to share the event and get things out like that, because let's face it, nobody's buying, you know, not many people are buying the newspaper anymore. So most people get their news through social media, through Facebook, so you got to kind of target, put it in their hands. We do different, you know, we send out press releases to all the newspapers, hoping that they cover. We've done a couple of newspaper interviews this past week that those articles should come to fruition, you know, in the week or two leading up to the event. Radio, some radio outlets are nice enough to have our personalities on. You know, they always want the bigger name stars, which is fine and understandable. So basically, anyway, you know, if I thought smoke signals would work, I'd be out here in the backyard building a fire, and, you know, having my rug, spinning them up.
Well, I know the website is primalconflictwrestling.com. What other social media outlets do you use? Do you have a Twitter? Do you use your Facebook page? How can fans find more information about Primal Conflict Wrestling?
And basically, any of the social media. We have an Instagram, Primal Conflict. We have a Twitter, Primal Conflict. PCW Facebook page, PCW discussion group. You know, all those things. We, like, as you mentioned, we have a website, primalconflictwrestling.com, where people can go purchase tickets to the event, DVDs, T-shirts, pinch bags, hoodies, a multitude of different merchandise things that we have on there. So that's always the first step, destination to, and then mm-hmm. YouTube, and all the links to the social media are on the website main page.
Very good. Well, the promoter of Primal Conflict Wrestling, Tyler Steele, thank you so much for being here on OWW Radio. I'm going to let you go, and we're going to go ahead and call Logan Easton LaRue now, talk to him for a little bit. But we have a big event coming up on September 17th, PCW's Revolution Rumble, headlined by the heavyweight title match between your champion, Drolix, and SmackDown Live star, Rhino. It should be fantastic. Again, Tyler, thank you for being here.
Thank you, David. We'll see you.
That was the promoter of Primal Conflict Wrestling, Tyler Steele. I'm going to go ahead and give now Logan Easton LaRue a call. Logan is one of the star performers in PCW, and I look forward to having him here on OWW Radio. Logan Easton LaRue, welcome to OWW Radio. We just had Tyler Steele on the air. He's extremely excited about September 17th, PCW's Revolution Rumble. Are you looking forward to that date as well?
Of course, I'm always looking forward to any Primal Conflict dates. Hopefully Doug Delicious is as well, because I'm sure I'm going to beat him up and anybody that he throws in my way. Maybe I'll throw somebody in his way, you know.
Well, I've had the honor of working with you here the past several years in the Virginia area, Delaware, West Virginia. Well, is this primarily where you wrestle, Logan, on the East Coast?
Yeah, for the most part, it's West Virginia, North Carolina, Virginia. I've been branching out more to Philadelphia and a few other places.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Reston in Herndon, Virginia. I went to Oakton High School. I played football and lacrosse there. Mm-hmm. I started wrestling when I was 16 in the off season of football.
Wrestling was kind of a way to stay in shape for football?
No, actually. Football was really like, whenever I was a kid watching wrestling, you know, JR would always talk about when guys were like, Letterman at whatever, played defensive line at Oklahoma University or anything like that. So the way I always saw it, like, I am a football fan, but wrestling has always been the first sport that I'm interested in, my favorite.
Oh.
So yeah, as soon as I turned 16, I started looking at a serious look at wrestling schools, and sure enough, Kida Pro Wrestling was real close to me in Manassas, Virginia, and I worked at an ice cream store in the off-season of football to save up money. Saved up all my money. My mom's deal was she would sign the waiver as long as I applied for colleges and took the SATs. So got all that done. And the summer of 2007, I started training at Kida Pro Wrestling.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, though, because a lot of people who like the traditional style of wrestling like you did in high school don't really care for the more theatrical professional wrestling. But you were watching pro wrestling on TV as well? That was a big draw for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been watching wrestling since I was probably about 4 or 5 years old. I remember my first introduction to it was an old copy of, like, WrestleMania 10, I think, that I accidentally rented at Blockbuster. So, and ever after that, I was pretty much just, like, amazed. Doink the Clown was my first favorite, I think, just because he was so colorful and everything. But Shawn Michaels quickly became my other favorite as a small white guy. I think he's everybody's on the indie circuit.
This is really making me feel old, by the way. When people talk about your favorite was Doink the Clown, I mean, that's like 15 years after I started watching wrestling. makes me feel
sorry.
Old. I did want to ask you, though, Logan, what was it about pro wrestling that attracted you to it? For example, when I went to my first live event, it was really the mixture of the theatrics and the crowd and the music and the energy and the athleticism. And the story that just drew me in, I was so compelled by it. What was it specifically for you?
I mean, I was so young when I started. I mean, of course, same, everything you said for sure is compelling to me about wrestling. I was always like a Batman, the Tim Burton Batman movies were my favorites when I was a kid. Any kind of comic book, like larger-than-life superhero type stuff, just things that are colorful and exciting and people getting hit was very appealing to me. Still is.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing, though, to like pro wrestling on television, and you obviously were a good athlete in high school. It's another thing, though, to go to a wrestling school and say, I'm going to really try this. Were you nervous? Were there any parts of the wrestling training process that made you think, I'm just not going to be able to do this?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think when I first signed up, I was kind of like, I had a chip on my shoulder, the jock kind of kid in high school. I remember, like, specifically picking out the sideways hat I was going to wear to try to look cool when I showed up. And, I mean, some of it came pretty easily, like the rolls, hitting ropes, chain wrestling came pretty easily. But I remember it took me months just to get down back bumping. And every time I was doing it, I would get such a headache. It took me forever to figure out, like, tuck your chin. I got a flip bump way before I ever got a back bump. It was awful. Like, I would go home and I'd have migraines. But there wasn't a single time, I wouldn't say, at all, that I considered stopping because I couldn't get it. I was just like, well, I'm going to show up tomorrow. I'm sure I'm going to leave with a migraine, but this is part of the job. This is what I've always wanted to do. I can't quit.
How many days a week were you going to training?
At the time, they were running, I think it was like beginners. Class was Monday and Wednesday. Advanced was Tuesday. They did promo class on Thursday, and then Friday was usually a show. So I started with just the Monday and Wednesday. And after like 3 or 4 weeks, they were just like, why don't you just start doing all the days? So then I was driving myself from where I live in Herndon, which is about 30, 45 minutes, depending on horrible Northern Virginia traffic, down to Manassas.
Yep.
So I ended up going about 4 or 5 days a week. And I was still going to school full-time in high school my senior year, and working in an ice cream shop at a Carvel ice cream to pay my ring dues.
Hey, by the way, did you tell your friends? Did people know you were going to training?
Yeah, I mean, even since I can remember, I was always like the kid that liked wrestling. And for a while, Attitude Era, all my friends liked it too. But then, like in high school, talking to girls and stuff, they're just like, why do you watch this big stuff with the guys in their underwear? But yeah, I mean, as soon as I found a school, I was like, I'm going there. I'm going to be a wrestler. And they were just like, Whatever, Logan, I'm sure you are, whatever. Like, I don't think they ever took me seriously. I don't think my parents even really took me seriously. Like, when my mom brought me to the school and had to sign the waiver, I think she was just like, well, he's going to grow out of this soon. He's going to grow out of this soon, whatever. He's paying for it. Yeah. Hopefully, after a few weeks, he'll pick something else.
To her point, though, Logan, there's a lot. I mean, I've gone to wrestling school just as a journalist and watched. It's brutal. People that think they could do this or that it's easy what they see on television or it's easy what they see at a live event. You're extremely well-trained athletes, and there are a lot of people, I'm sure, that go to wrestling school and 1 or 2 days later never come back. It is really intense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In the time I was there, Northern Virginia is such a populous area right outside of D.C. There's probably at least 50 to 60 people that I trained with at some point in just the 2 years that school was open. And people still wrestling now, I think there's about 5 or 6 of us, one of them being Jade and TNA, who got far more successful than I am at the moment. But so many people would show up, and it'd be like that first bump day, they'd just be like, they couldn't get it, it hurts, and they're just like, oh, maybe this isn't for me. And even less than that, just like chain wrestling, footwork, figuring out which side to work and stuff like that, it was just frustrating, and I don't know, like, they think they have that passion, but the way the business is that it's so open now, which is how I got in, I can definitely see the detriment for some of the old-timers that think, you know, like, some people should just stay on the other side of the guardrail and shouldn't be trained in wrestling, shouldn't be, the magician's secret shouldn't be revealed to that person, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'm sure there were favorites of yours, like you said, Doink and Shawn Michaels, other people you saw on television. But what about in real life? What about when you started training and started working? Who became some of your mentors and some of the people you really learned from?
My head trainer while I was down there was John Kerman, who's wrestled for Primal Conflict Wrestling. He's currently wrestling pretty much exclusively for Nova Pro. Bobby Shields was there really often. Bobby was really helpful. It was a much skinnier Bobby Shields back then, but he was always really good about helping out us younger guys. My current, or a current tag team partner, is somebody who looks very similar to me, Hype Rockwell, also known as The Reason, C.A. Elliott. He was there all the time. And then, like, Jimmy Cicero and Christian York would pop in every now and then. And, like, Christian York, I remember, like, the first day I was learning to do punches, he was helping me out with punches. And just kept hitting him in the face. And luckily, he was, like, really cool about a 16-year-old punched him in the face and didn't stretch me or beat me up about it. But,
and he could, too. I worked with Christian York.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's huge.
Oh,
I'm sure
he's huge.
Still.
Yeah, he's just huge. How long, though, so you started going to training, how long until you felt you were ready to be in front of a live crowd and work a match?
I was a pretty arrogant 16-year-old, so I'd say I started in June. I felt like by December I was ready to take on the world and be the next Shawn Michaels. But being only 16, then 17 by December, I couldn't wrestle in Virginia because you need to have a license, and you have to be 18 to have a license. So, I mean, like, I would talk to the owner of the school all the time, like, I'm happy to keep training, but I want to get in front of people. I want to work. Finally, April of 2008 was my very first match. I had to go up to Pennsylvania to wrestle, which I still think might have been illegal at 17. I wrestled a guy named Joseph Brooks. We had a really good match. Like, a lot of my friends from high school made that hour-and-a-half drive to come check it out. Mm. But it always kind of let me down that my first match wasn't at Kaida where I was training, and that it wasn't close enough that more people could have come to it.
What were the nerves like? I mean, even the drive, were you so nervous on the drive up, or was it just this unbelievable excitement because you were ready to lace the boots up and actually walk down the aisle?
I mean, I was totally excited, but I think to the outside, I couldn't express that excitement. So, and I was also, of course, super nervous. I remember I was pretty much silent on the car ride up. We were going over the match, and I was like, I was almost shaking, like this weird mix of excitement and nervousness and all this stuff. But like in the back of my head, I'm like a goal-driven, but still pragmatic person. And I just like, I felt like I knew what I could do. I had an idea of what our match could be. I could visualize it. I knew him because he worked at Cut all the time. So I was pretty confident that we could go out there and do it.
You've mentioned a few times here, Logan, that you were kind of an arrogant kid. You bring that to the ring. The Logan Easton LaRue character exudes arrogance. It exudes confidence. You play a great heel. You really work the crowd. Talk about how difficult it is, though, coming up with a persona, building a character, and then presenting that to the audience.
It's super hard. And I think, like, a lot of people get into wrestling school with the idea that I'm Stone Cold, or I'm John Cena, or I'm whatever, top good guy. Everyone's going to love me, and I'm just going to beat up everybody, and you're going to have to take all my offense, and the show's going to be about me. I'm The Rock, I'm Stone Cold, whatever. And the reality is most people just show up. They have, if you're lucky, they have trunks that are like in stock, high spots, crappy gear. Most of them are not very physically fit. And they have no semblance of like what's the character that's going to relate to the crowd. In their head, they have like a super four-dimensional crazy character that like totally makes sense. But I find very rarely is that shown to the audience through their gear, through their work, through their body appearance, everything. When I first started, I was just Logan Hodge, and I really had no character for probably like the first 3 to 4 years of my wrestling. Like if they were like, your face, I was like, okay, I'll come out and yell, come on. If I was a heel, I'd come out and go, you suck. And like, I've always been a better heel, and I've had confidence, but I didn't really have a character until I figured out that I wanted to be Mr. Class, Young and Handsome, Logan Easton LaRue. And just coming up with that really took me some time, and it, like, took me back because I was like, well, it probably fits my personality better, but I always wanted to have gear that was, like, inspired by superheroes, and I wanted to be, like, this cool X-Division-style worker, but that's, like, it's really not me. I'm decently athletic. I can do some stuff, but I needed a lot more behind it than just, I'm Logan, watch me do my fancy moves.
You know, I have a theory that, you know, and I hear from a lot of wrestlers that it's a lot more fun to be the heel, right? To get the crowd fired up and get them angry. I actually think it's very difficult, though, to be a good baby. I mean, it's to be a believable baby face that the people actually cheer for. For example, Ricky Steamboat, just a prototypical baby face. People just loved him. They wanted to root for him. But he didn't kind of cross the line into being too cheesy. He was just perfect right as a baby face. And I think that's difficult. Is that a fair statement, that it's hard to be a baby face that comes off as believable?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on the indies especially, too, because you're already fighting people from pulling their phone out or texting or even just sitting back with their arms folded being like, why am I going to cheer this guy? I do think it's super hard to be a babyface. That being said, the times that I work babyface, I actually find it a lot more satisfying when like I can look at that crowd like on my comeback, and I'm feeling that energy. Like, I love being a heel because I find it easier, and I can work the crowd. I can control them. But, like, you don't get the adrenaline rush as a babyface when you can look at that crowd and they're really behind you on a comeback. I think that's far better than anything you can get as a heel. And I didn't experience that until fairly recently. Yeah, it's strange. Or even working as a babyface and, like, you're fighting against a crowd that's looking at their phone, or they're disinterested in you in the match, or they're getting beer or food or whatever. Like, at the start of the match, they're either booing you or they're just totally not paying attention. But by the end, you really have them, you know. They're biting on every near fall, and they're with you in your journey. You keep getting cut down, and they're still coming with you. They're with you. They don't want to see you get cut down. They want you to blow the top off, start taking heads off.
So you said you started training in 2007. You're going almost 10 years here. Looking back on your career, Logan, do you have some favorite opponents that you've worked, or perhaps opponents that you would like to work in the future?
Yeah, definitely. Favorite people that I've worked, the very top of that list is probably Mr. Sanjay Dutt, who me and him at Nova Pro on September 16th, they have a big, gigantic cage match for the one-year anniversary of that. Bobby Shields, the long-reigning PCW champion, me and him had some really good matches, and I think those matches at PCW were the first to really show fans that I had some clue what I was doing in wrestling and wasn't just the guy who did two moves and lost or whatever. Other guys around the indies that I like to work with. There's a tag team called Devastation Corporation that mostly works for Chikara. I've had awesome matches with two of my favorite guys to work with are Blaster McMassive and Max Matchmaster. D.A. Elliott, the reason, he's a good one too.
One thing that's so interesting about wrestlers today is the library and the resources out there to watch historical matches and to watch what's going on around the world, YouTube and the WWE Network and things like that. Do you take advantage of those kinds of video opportunities to see what's going on and to learn?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even before that, my DVD library of wrestling was so huge. I mean, I just have boxes and boxes and boxes of mostly WWE stuff because that's what I grew up with, and that's always been my favorite style of wrestling. But, like, I think for 2005 to 2006, I have almost every Ring of Honor show during that two-year span. I have so many TNA pay-per-views and stuff, but I'd say on average I spend at least an hour and a half every day watching some form of wrestling, much to the chagrin of my girlfriend who can't stand it. But, like, I'm a fan at heart, so, like, sometimes I'll be watching stuff and I'll just get so into it, and then I'll have to take that step back and be like, all right, this is kind of like homework, this is studying, like, you need to really be paying attention to these masters and how are they owning their craft, how are they getting the crowd involved, what can you take from that?
Absolutely.
But yeah, with the network and YouTube, like, I don't think there's any excuse to not, if you're serious about wrestling, do your homework and really study people who came before you. And people doing their thing now, you got to stay current. You should know what's out there.
You talked about working all over the East Coast and kind of expanding out a little bit. People always talk about the difficulty of the travel. It's a real concern, though, Logan, right? Getting from town to town takes its toll on your body. It takes time and energy. How has that been for you as you've adjusted here to being a professional wrestler?
I kind of like the road. I say that, but you know, when you have six weekends in a row that you're getting 4 hours of sleep and you're all over the place, spending lots of money on gas, garbage road food, all that stuff, it can be frustrating. But I don't know. In my mind, I've always kind of romanticized the idea that it's kind of the carny lifestyle, that traveling worker that goes from town to town, and the people don't know you in the next town, so you have to, each time you're fighting a crowd to win them over, and you're trying to show what you got and kind of spreading your brand too. I always think it's a really cool idea, and I mean, of course, being on the road can suck. I love to go to the gym. It really bothers me if I miss a day of running or lifting, and it's hard to eat clean on the road. Not that I eat that clean normally, which I should be doing better, but
Well, it is, because I travel for work a lot, and there's a lot of running through the airports, a lot of hotel food. It's hard. There's no question, and that's one of the things that I don't think it's discussed enough. People talk about life on the road, the miles in the car, and the hotel rooms. It's difficult to eat the right kind of proper meals to maintain the physique you need for this kind of business, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, I'm somebody too, and I'm driving, I kind of want to snack on something or have a beverage of some sort, and it's just, I can do diet soda, but like a bag of chips, that's a lot of calories that I don't need.
Yeah, no, that's difficult. For yourself, as you go in further in your career here, Logan, what else can you still improve on as a performer? Is it working on your mic skills? Is it working on your move set? Working with different style of opponents? What is still out there for you to improve on?
I mean, everything. If somebody tells you that there's nothing they can improve on, or there's aspects they've perspected, I think they should probably quit wrestling. Everything. My mic skills. I need to learn to ramble less, pick my words better. Figure out the right words that are going to connect with the audience. And that's, I mean, the key to everything. To my wrestling, where's the part in my match where the lull happens and people start picking up their phones? Is there moves that I could do much crisper or cleaner? Or taking care of my opponent, how do I make my opponent look better? I can always be doing that better. People don't realize when they watch wrestling, especially non-fans or very casual fans, just how much thought goes into it and how good the greats were. Like, I just watched some Rockers and Brainbusters, and they're doing these things in 1989 that seem like they have a crowd, like, literally eating out of their hands, and, like, they're still obeying the tag team rules, whereas I think on the indies a lot of times now, tag teams have a habit of, like, after the hot tag happens, then it's just everybody's running wild, finisher fest. The Revival has done a really good job of copying the Brainbusters and showing, you know, like, still a semblance of a real match, not crapping on the referee by having the legal man in. And I think it builds more drama when it's in the confines of you're not breaking the rules of this story, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, everything.
Yeah. You're learning from Tully and Arn, is just, you know, and then the Rockers, just the best. One thing I always liked about Arn Anderson, and I actually wanted to ask you about Brock Lesnar. Did you watch SummerSlam?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so Logan, to me, and Arn exemplifies this as well, as does Brock Lesnar, there's a real sense of danger and anger and aggression in it. You know, we know that this is sports entertainment now. Let's not pretend we don't. But there are some performers in the ring that make it feel dangerous. I always thought Arn Anderson, like, he was as tough all over, in the ring, out of the ring. you didn't want to mess with him. And what we saw from Brock Lesnar in the main event of SummerSlam, where he busted Randy Orton open. Remember, there's been some rumors whether he was supposed to do that or not, and Chris Jericho confronted him. I don't know the truth, but I do know this. It came across extremely real and extremely violent. What did you feel about that with Brock Lesnar in the main event of SummerSlam?
Yeah, just like you said, it's just, as a fan and as somebody who's been working this long, as I was watching, I was kind of like, is this what's supposed to happen? And I'm sure everybody around the internet, all wrestling fans, felt the same way. And I think that's the beauty of how good he is and how good they put that segment together to make people think that. I think Brock Lesnar, in a lot of ways, is the last real singular draw in wrestling. And I think people would follow him. Like, they followed him to UFC. They would follow him if, for whatever reason, he went to a different company. I think they would follow him there, because there's a real unpredictability and, like you said, like, a danger element to a Brock Lesnar that I don't think a lot of wrestlers have. And I think that's really important. And it's something that I think is actually easier for people to convey on the indies than it is on TV. Because on TV, like, there's certain rules and, like, people expect something out of TV. On the indies, you can get right into somebody's face. You can be right in their lap and be terrifying to them. They don't know what you're going to do. They've probably never seen you before. They don't know who you are. Hopefully you're not telling them they suck and then trying to hawk your t-shirt or merchandise stand right afterwards. But, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a big part of wrestling that's missing, is that sense of danger and unpredictability. Too often in our matches, in our characters, we're falling into the same stereotypes and the same tropes that you can go to an indie show and see 100 times, the shitty hot tag and long chin locks and stuff like that. But I think that's where we're losing wrestling fans.
I did sit ringside one time for a Lesnar match, and I got to tell you, I didn't get comfortable in my seat. It was a strange feeling. You know, you're just part of the crowd and everything, but it did feel a little bit like uncontained fury. It was a weird, just a weird feeling with him. And I watching in the main event, I mean, he busted Orton open the hard way or the old way or whatever you call it in the business. And that was a lot of blood.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely looks scary. It's not something I wouldn't particularly want to be elbowed in the head by Brock Lesnar, but...
Logan, I had the privilege one time of interviewing Buff Bagwell, and he told me in the interview, it's important for a wrestler to quote-unquote make a dent in the business, because a lot of wrestlers come and a lot of wrestlers go, but he told me, like, when a promoter books him, they always want Buff to wear the hat. Buff Bagwell's got to wear the hat. You think about, like, Hacksaw Jim Duggan in the 2x4 and those types of things. When you're done wrestling, Logan, or as you go through here, what kind of dent do you want to make in the wrestling business that people would remember you by?
I don't know. I don't know that I want it to be something as gimmicky, not to belittle them, as gimmicky as a hat or a 2x4, though, to make a dent. I do think it's very important to make a dent and to have a lasting memory. And I don't know that I've found the thing that I want to be my legacy yet. Mm-hmm. I still feel like I'm very much in the early part of my career. And I still, like, as much as I like my character now, I definitely think there's plenty of opportunity for growth. And if I don't grow, then that's a problem. And that means that if I have peaked or I've stagnated or plateaued, I need to do something else. It's funny you mentioned those two because I've actually wrestled both of those guys. I don't know what I want my legacy to be yet. I'm still searching. And I don't want that to come across in a negative way. I want it to be a positive thing. That's a goal for me to figure that out. What is my dent in the wrestling business and what's my role? What can my role be? If that makes sense.
It does, and it's a challenge, I think, because the crowds are different. Like you said, different territories, times change. You know, things that I liked in the 80s growing up would not work today. You think about the Russians in the 80s, Nikolai Volkov, Nikita Koloff, that gimmick just doesn't work anymore because of the changing world that we live in now. So it's interesting. You've got to stay current. You've got to stay relevant. And you're off to a great start. You're one of the big stars of Primal Conflict Wrestling and other promotions around the East Coast. Logan Easton LaRue, thank you so much for being here on OWW Radio. Before I let you go, I want you to tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
On social media, I have my own Instagram, it's more of a personal page, is Wait, WAITLEL, and I have my own personal Facebook, which isn't really for fans. There's a guy that looks a lot like me, though, that you can find on Twitter at N_R_G_tag_team. Again, it's not me, it just looks a lot like me, but there's a place to find me.
Okay. Well, I'll post the Instagram account. Would that be okay?
That'll work. Yep.
That'll work. Logan Easton LaRue, thank you so much for being here. Good luck to you on the 16th. You said you have a big steel cage match, and then we'll see you September 17th in Ranson, West Virginia, part of Primal Conflict Wrestling's big Revolution Rumble card. Can't wait to be a part of it. Thank you so much for being on OWW Radio.
Thank you, Dave. Talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. Okay. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you are there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thanks again to Logan Easton LaRue and Tyler Steele for today's interviews. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. Alright, well that's okay. On your mark.
Get set. Save. Get to Nissan's Bottom Line Summer event and take home a winner with big model year-end offers on our award-winning lineup. Hurry. Offers end soon. Shop your local Nissan store and choose Nissan.com today.